Kia ora, welcome to Edmund's Podcast, episode 333. Today is Friday, August 11th, 2017. Well, they say a week is a long time in politics, and if that's the case, then we've probably just had about a year in the past week, because it has been eventful. And that's my main topic for today. It's actually a lot of updates on what I talked about last time. But first, a couple of just housekeeping notes. This is actually the second time I've recorded this episode. I recorded one yesterday, but there was this loud hum that was in the background, and I don't know what the source of it was. As I said, I think, when I talked about switching to this Icicle by Blue interface so I could connect my microphone directly to my Mac, I found that I couldn't hear myself when I'm recording. And so I didn't know that there was a hum until I listened to it back, which, of course, was after I had recorded the whole thing. And it was too loud to try to remove through noise reduction or what have you. So I dumped that one, starting over, and I don't know whether there will be. I did do tests, and it didn't seem to be too bad, but if you do hear a hum in the background, I sincerely apologize. And I will continue to try to figure out what is going on. I turned the gain down on the device, thinking maybe I bumped it and accidentally turned it up. I don't know. But whatever the case is, it is still slightly there, and hopefully it won't be too distracting. The other thing is that our neighbors are having a fence built today, and the builder is using a nail gun to do it. And so you may hear an occasional soft bang in the background, and if so, that's why. And similarly, you might hear the dogs suddenly barking loudly and running away, and it's because one of the builders brings his dogs to the site, and they don't like that. Our dogs don't like that. So, now that that's all out of the way, where were we? Well, when last we left our story, the Labour Party had just changed leaders, and the leader of the Green Party was in deep doo-doo over revelations, admissions, whatever you want to call it, that she had committed benefit fraud some two decades ago when she was a solo mother studying law at Auckland University. Now, the fallout from that was fairly predictable. A lot of people were using it as an excuse to bash beneficiaries, which is what we call people on welfare, in general, and to say, oh my goodness, they've got it so easy, they got all these handouts, blah, 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 blah. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, because beneficiaries have historically been treated badly. They don't get a whole lot of money. We're not talking about big amounts. I heard I saw in one story somewhere that it amounted to $50 a week was the benefit that was in question here. And just for anybody who didn't listen last week, what she did is that when she was on this benefit, she had flatmates at various times and didn't report that to the welfare department, and which is an offense under law. You have to do that. So she was getting paid more than she was entitled to because of that. They reduce your benefit when you've got flatmates. And she was trying to provide for her daughter and therefore didn't report the flatmates. And it was a violation of law. I mean, nobody, I think, doubts that. It's just that some people feel it's justifiable, and other people say it's never justifiable. Some people say that why is she, as a brown woman, being singled out when rich white people get away with their fraud and other sorts of crimes? Well, it's not as simple as that. It is true that she was treated harshly by a lot of commentators, particularly, you know, people bringing up talkback radio. But it's not true, necessarily, that she was being held to a different standard. A lot of that is a matter of opinion. A lot of that is a matter of personal ideology. And quite frankly, I can't solve that. I can't say definitively, yes, she was treated badly, or no, she was treated fairly. I don't think she was treated entirely fairly, but I don't think she was treated quite as badly as a lot of her supporters feel she was. I'm somewhere between those two viewpoints. However, like I said, I can't solve that. That's the sort of thing that people have to make up their own mind about. What is clear is that there were at least a couple of media outlets who were out for her scalp and were a bit unseemly. TV3 in particular, which is now called News Hub, their political editor Patrick Gower, is an overly dramatic sort. He is generally not fair to the left, in my opinion. And he was unusually moralistic, I thought. That's not true. He is always moralistic about holding politicians to a higher standard and all that. And maybe that's a good thing. But It just, having watched him now for many years, I tend to find him to be grating and to be unfair to politicians, actually all over the spectrum, but primarily to the center and center left, more than on the right. But that could just be my perception as well. Other people may see it differently, but that's certainly what I saw. Now, the big news this week is that Mathieu Touré, the co-leader of the Green Party, stepped down as co-leader. She said that scrutiny, that's the word she used, the scrutiny of her family was getting to be too much. And I don't know specifically what she's talking about, so I can't comment on that. However, I do, as a matter of opinion, as a matter of policy, whatever you want to call it, I think that a politician's family is out of bounds. I don't think it's fair or right to talk about a politician's children, for instance, or their parents necessarily, unless they're germane to a particular story. For instance, in Materia's case, her mother was one of the flatmates at one point. That might be a legitimate thing for the media to look into. But her daughter certainly is out of bounds, and I don't think that extended family, it's legitimate to talk to extended family unless you've got a really damn good reason to do so, and I don't think the media did. So again, I don't know specifically what Materia was referring to, but as a general principle, I think that that journalists should leave politicians' families alone. They're not the ones running for office. They're not the ones elected. They're not the ones, if they have been elected, who are getting taxpayer money to pay their salaries. So they're out of bounds, in my opinion. So the other thing that was going on is that, coincidental to that perhaps, we don't know, a new poll was released by, Three News, it's not called that anymore, News Hub, done by Reed Research, which was actually the most recent one before that was done, and it was taken after the Labour leadership change. And the results were, to put it rather mildly, huge. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Let me refresh you in the last poll. National was on 45.2%. In this poll, they dropped a little tiny bit to 44.4%, which isn't statistically significant. It's well within the margin of error. Labour was on 24.1%. In this poll, 33.1%, which is a skyrocketing move. And the Greens fell from 13% to 8.3%, but New Zealand First also fell from 13% to 9.2%. The others are more or less where they were in the last poll, so that hasn't changed very much. The bigger story, however, is in what I call the beauty contest of the Preferred Prime Minister poll. And that's a poll of who New Zealanders want to be their prime minister. And it's a largely meaningless poll because we don't vote for the prime minister, we vote for the parties. However, as I always remind people, it matters in the sense that it shows how people are perceiving the potential government of the two main party leaders. Do they think that this person would be a good prime minister? And because if they don't, then chances are they're not going to like that person's party either. So it's sort of indicative of overall attitudes to parties, and it sometimes could influence how people ultimately vote on Election Day. Now, in the last Reed Research poll, Bill English, who's the current prime minister, having succeeded John Key, who stepped down in December, I think it was December anyway, late last year, it was at 25.8%. Now, in this poll, he went up to 27.7%, which, you know, you think, oh, that's pretty good. In that last poll, Andrew Little, who at the time was leader of the Labour Party, was 8.7%, which, by the way, is the lowest position for a Labour leader since the government changed in 2008, since before that. And so it indicates that he was not connecting with New Zealanders, as I said last time. It was a disaster. Jacinda Ardern, in her first poll as Labour leader, was at 26.3%, as against 27.7% for Bill English, and which is basically a statistical tie because, again, it's within the margin of error, the difference between them. And that is an amazing comeback for a Labour leader, and it is all down to her. I should say that Winston Peters dropped from 11.9% to 10%. He's in third place, and that's kind of oven by itself. It's kind of like, oh, well, whatever. But the significance of that is that he was in second place for months, basically, up until this poll, and he's dropped to third place. And that in itself is significant. Now, all of these numbers are numbers, and they're interesting and all that sort of stuff. But what matters about these numbers are the overall trends. On election night of 2014, Labour got 25.13%, which was more than Labour was polling at when Andrew Little was still the leader. And that's why people were saying that Labour was heading for a historic loss, and it was. And now at 33.3%, Labour is crawling back up. It is now above 2014. It is now above, what year was this, 2011, when Phil Goff was the leader then. And it is now in the territory of 2008, when Labour lost government and National became the government. As a matter of fact, the current level, the current polling for Labour and for National are about the same as they were in 2008 when National became government. And part of that is because the support parties for National were much bigger than they are now, and so they were entitled to more MPs, and Labour's support parties were down. The Greens in 2008 were less, they got 6.72% of the vote, so they got less than they have now. In the 2011 election, they were at 11%, and in the 2014 election, they were at 10%. Both of which obviously are higher than they're at now. So the problem here is that some of the vote was going from the Greens to Labour. That is pretty evident. And some of the support, I should say, the votes haven't been cast yet. Some of the support has gone from the Green Party to the Labour Party. And that doesn't help for a change of government. For there to be a change of government, Labour has to take votes from National. And that is a tall order. However, because Jacinda Ardern seems to be personally popular, it becomes possible. In order to change government, Labour and its allies have to have a higher percentage of the vote than National and its allies. I mean, that's pretty obvious. You don't even have to understand how MMP works to know that much. And that means they have to take votes from parties other than those on the center-left. And chances are they will go up. Will they go up high enough to knock off National? I don't know. If you look at the combined support for all of the parties who want to change the government, it's more than half. It's like 52% or something like that, as opposed to 40-odd percent for those who want the current National-led government. However, a lot of those parties are never going to get into Parliament, so it doesn't matter. Their votes are wasted. And the only votes that matter will be for changing the government will be the ones for parties that will end up in Parliament. And as I said, Labour has to take votes from National and not from the Greens and not even from New Zealand First, although taking some from New Zealand First would be okay because that would give the Greens a stronger hand. And the reason that matters is because New Zealand First is a centre-right party, which is left on some significant issues, and it would help if they weren't the strongest of the two minor parties in coalition with Labour. Now, there is a counter narrative. I say counter because I don't agree with it. That the Green Party, that the Labour Party is responsible for the Green Party's fall. And I think that that's nonsense. And here's why. Labour, it's true that the Greens lost more than a third of their support since the last poll. We're comparing apples to apples, remember. These are two polls from the same company. But it's also true that New Zealand First lost nearly a third of its support, and it went to Labour. We presume that the slight amount of support that National lost also went to Labour, which is entirely probable. And we know that because of the fact that both the Greens and New Zealand First lost a roughly equivalent amount of support, and Labour Party disaffected Labour Party voters tend to go to either the Greens or New Zealand First. So those are votes that were coming home, so to speak. But we also know this because Jacinda Ardern did so well in the preferred prime minister poll, basically tied with Bill English. And what that means is that it's her personal popularity that has affected the overall results, not anything that happened with Matiria Ture as such, although it could have convinced some Labour-leaning Green voters to say, oh, no, I'm going to vote labor, this is just too nuts, or whatever. That is possible. But I don't buy into the narrative that it's labor's fault that either the Greens have gone down in the poll. I think that is on Materia's shoulders. And it's certainly not labor's fault that she decided to resign, that Materia decided to resign. The narrative goes that Jacinda Ardern said that Materia Touré wouldn't be a minister in a labor-led government, and that led to her downfall. Well, that messes up the timeline. It is true that Jacinda Ardern expressed to the Green Party that this would be the case, that Materia would not be a minister in a labor-led government. Materia said publicly that she was unaware of that when she decided on her own that she would not accept a ministerial portfolio in a new government. And she announced that publicly. After that, Jacinda Ardern confirmed that Materia would not be a minister in a labor-led government. Now, when you look at the timeline, it's difficult to see how you can say that labor is responsible for the fall of Materia Touré when she herself said she was unaware of labor's decision and announced it took herself out of the running for a ministerial post before labor publicly announced that that was the case. So either Green Party supporters are saying that Materia is lying, or they just refuse to believe what actually happened. Because they can't both be true. And so that's one of the reasons why I don't buy the narrative that it's labor's fault. A lot of the Green supporters say, well, of course we're not expecting you or anybody else to say or intimate that welfare fraud is okay. But you could have been more supportive. Well, what does that mean exactly? It means not saying that Materia would not be a minister in a labor-led government, even though Materia had already said that. It also meant, apparently, talking about how Materia was an example of how people on a benefit are driven to bad decisions or wrong decisions or whatever out of desperation and all that sort of thing. And I would buy that argument if that had been the focus of the supporters of Materia. And it wasn't. It was about Materia. It was about how she was being treated badly because she was a brown woman. And it wasn't about the problems with benefits and how beneficiaries are treated. And they are treated very badly. And my personal pain in this situation, I mean, I've always liked Materia personally. Oh, I don't know her, but I mean, from what I see in the news, my personal pain in this is that could have been a really good discussion to have, a really productive discussion to change the narrative from those bloody welfare cheats to those people are being victimized by a system. And that opportunity was lost because everything became about Materia. Now, I talked to plenty of people in the time since this all broke, ordinary people who are not aligned with any particular party or any party at all. And the thing I heard the most common was people saying, if only she'd shown some contrition, if only she'd apologized for what she did and shown some remorse. And apparently these people feel that would have made a difference. They feel that Materia was setting herself up as morally justified for what she did, and not only that, she was defiant, and that in doing so she was setting an example or a precedent for other people to commit benefit fraud and just say, well, it was morally justifiable, therefore it's okay and it's not a crime. And they didn't like that. And I can see why, because it is a sort of moral relativism when you say to people, you may not do this thing unless you have to. You know, you can't do that. So I can understand why perfectly ordinary New Zealanders were really unhappy with the whole situation. On the other hand, it was over, I think, 2 decades ago. It was more than 2 decades ago, I'm sure it was. And holding her, when she was not a member of parliament, she was not a politician, she was nothing, holding her particularly responsible for that as if she'd just done it seems a little over the top to me. She did meet with the current welfare officials to see if they want to pay, if she needs to pay it back or what have you, which is the right thing to do. However, she could have taken care of this years ago and sorted it out before she even entered politics, but she didn't. And that counts against her in a lot of people's minds. Now, I saw one Green MP was saying in a Facebook post that she was afraid that this would discourage future people from entering politics because they don't have a squeaky clean background. And I think that's a valid point, a valid concern, because who among us is absolutely without sin? You know, we've all done something in our lives, probably. Most of us have done something in our lives that we regret. And it's unfortunate if that would discourage people from entering politics because they're afraid that it might they might get caught ultimately. But the vast majority of politicians in New Zealand who fall don't fall because of something they did in their past. It's something that it's because of something they've done while they were in parliament. And in this case, the only thing that Metiria did while she was in parliament is she admitted this historic case of benefit fraud, having committed benefit fraud some 2 decades ago. And she didn't apologize. She didn't seem contrite. And it only laterally made efforts to pay it back. And that didn't sit well with the public. Was she morally justified? That's not my call. Are New Zealanders morally justified in being offended by her and her lack of contrition? That's also not my call. I think that gets down to people's personal morality, personal ethics, personal sense of fairness and justice and all that, all those sorts of things. Now, many people in the Green Party see things very differently, and they think that Metiria and the Greens are a victim. And I've seen some really hateful rhetoric directed at the Labour Party in particular. They need somebody to blame, and I get that. And I've been in the position where somebody I supported was treated badly by the media. It happened to David Cunliffe. It happened to Phil Goff. And, of course, now we know that a lot of that was because of the dirty politics team and the National Party. But nevertheless, it hurts like hell when that happens, when you see somebody being victimized unfairly by the news media, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. You can't change the narrative, and you can't fix it. But I do think in this case, if Metiria had acted slightly differently, if she had been more contrite, I think that it could have changed things. Would it have? I don't know. But I do know that it's not Labour's fault that this all happened. And that's where we are right now. It's, like I said, it's been a hugely eventful week as far as that goes, as far as politics goes. I doubt that the coming week will be as eventful, but hey, you just never know. Because as I said, a lot has happened over the past week. And there'll be more polls in the weeks ahead, and I'm sure there will be more events. The National Party has its own ongoing scandal with one of their MPs who harassed a staffer who had worked for the current prime minister, because this guy was handpicked to replace Bill English when he became a list-only MP. It's become a question of what did Bill English know and when did he know it, pretty much. And it was revealed recently that he sent dozens and dozens of texts to this woman who was a staffer, because, again, she used to be his staffer. And so he had a lot of knowledge about this situation, apparently. And the woman was given a payout, which has been called hush money, when she left this guy. His name's Todd Barclay, left the MP, 27 years old, I believe, and used to be a tobacco lobbyist before entering Parliament on been gifted this safe national seat. So he harassed her, and there was this payout. The money for it came either mostly or entirely, I'm unclear about this, from the budget of the leader of the National Party, who at the time was John Key. So John Key knew about it. Bill English knew about it. Did they try to cover it up? Don't know. The police at the time said there was nothing for them to investigate. They've reopened the case. I have a feeling that this is going to come back to hurt the National Party in the weeks ahead. Whether it hurts them in the polls, whether it hurts them on election day, I don't know. But I do think that the story isn't completely over yet. So there will be some more turmoil in the weeks ahead. I don't think you're going to be seeing it from Labour. Labour doesn't need to lift its game much to be in a much better position. It does need to go over 35%. It needs to be pushing 40 in order to form government, but certainly over 35. And then you're talking about the possibility of changing the government. And that's what I'm going to be watching in the weeks ahead. And I'll be telling you about it as I find this out. So something to look forward to. Oh boy. Meanwhile, we are starting to, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Anticipate, I guess, spring, because it's only a couple of weeks away or so, well, a bit more than that, because today's the 11th, and spring starts on September 1st, so what's that? That's a little over 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever. The weather has been a bit milder lately because it's been cold, but we're still getting a heck of a lot of rain, which I complain about endlessly. And so hopefully that will, hopefully the weather will start to get a bit more mild. It doesn't, I honestly, it's not just about the rain. It's not just about the cold. It's about getting both of them together that just gets to be a bit boring after a while. So hopefully the weather will get better and then I can get out and start taking some photos and stuff. But yeah, and hopefully I won't have any more winter afflictions. The other day, let's see, today's Friday, so it must have been Wednesday night, I developed a cough. And it was a really strong one, deep coughs. It didn't keep me awake. I was able to sleep all right. But it was pretty yucky. And then yesterday, it was largely gone. And today, I haven't really coughed. But it did affect my voice, which you may be able to hear. I don't know. It's a bit scratchy. And I'm hoping that that was it. That it was just whatever that was. That it was just a one, you know, short-term thing. But that is everything that we've got going on at the moment. I have got a lot of projects I need to catch up on around the house, delayed by mine being sick and all that sort of stuff. And maybe I'll have that sort of thing to talk about next time. Who knows? It could be an exciting thing for us all. I laugh because it won't be exciting for me, certainly. But that's it for today, and that's it for this week. Have a great weekend, everyone. Ka kite anō, and I'll talk to you soon. You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.